So you've been in therapy for years. Maybe you've been in 12-step recovery for years. You've read the books, you know your attachment style, you understand your trauma, and yet you're still waiting to actually feel different. You're still stuck in the same patterns you've been stuck in for a really, really long time. And listen, if I am describing you here, no shame at all, because for a very, very long time, this was me. And then I realized that all of my healing had been from the neck up. I had never actually gotten into my body, and I learned that somatic healing, nervous system regulation, it's not optional. Like, it's not just a suggestion. It is a requirement if you actually want to heal from a dysfunctional childhood. And what do you know? Once I actually started doing that work, I finally started making headway on the patterns that I was starting to think that I was going to be stuck in for the rest of my life. And so I built a course, y'all. It is called Safe Within, and it is everything that has actually worked for me all in one 7-week life journey. It's 3 parts. In the first part, we are going to actually learn how to feel safe in our bodies through practices rooted in somatic experience. Experiencing and polyvagal theory. Then in part 2, through somatic parts work, we are going to get to know the parts of us that are keeping us stuck in places that we don't want to be stuck in. And then in part 3, this is about actually learning how to feel good as a felt experience in your body. Because let's be honest, for so many of us, good feelings are deeply uncomfortable. Calm feels unsafe, joy feels suspicious, and we're going to do something about that, okay? And here's something I want to be really honest about. One of the biggest reasons I struggle to do this work for so long is that I could not get myself to do it alone. Like every day I would tell myself, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And then what do you know, at the end of the day, I had not done X, Y, and Z. This was day after day after day, year after year after year. And so part of what I built into this intentionally is the accountability piece. We meet live, you show up. You can't just talk yourself out of it the way that you can when you're trying to do this stuff on your own. And listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that you're going to be perfectly healed after 7 weeks, but what I do think is that you are going to feel a hell of a lot more connected to your body. You are going to feel much safer actually being in your body, and you're going to walk away with tools that you will use for years, if not for the rest of your damn life. And I want to make this very, very clear. You do not need to have any prior experience with IFS, with parts work, somatic work to do this course. None. You can show up having never heard of any of these words before, and you will be taken care of. I will guide you through every single step. So we start July 1st. When you sign up, you also get 2 months free in the shit show with access to all of our weekly support groups and everything else that we got going on in there. So you, yes, you, yes, you, the person who knows that they need to sign up, the person who is currently in their head right now, thinking about how I need to do this course, get out of your damn head and get into your damn body. Take that little hand of yours, get on your computer or on your phone, and just sign the hell up already. Go to adultchildpodcast.com/safewithin, adultchildpodcast.com/safewithin. And if you have any questions at all, feel free to email me directly at Andrea@adultchildpodcast.com. Do it. Do it now. Not only did our childhoods leave us with shame, anxiety, and trust issues, they also managed to make the good stuff feel unsafe too. Because it wasn't just the painful emotions that got distorted growing up. A lot of us learned that feeling good was its own kind of danger. Here are 3 reasons why this happened. Number 1, good things didn't last. We got our hopes up and we got let down. Holidays got ruined, birthdays got ruined, mom never stayed sober. Our parents always started fighting again. Over and over, we learned that good things were temporary and that the higher we let ourselves feel, the harder the fall. Brené Brown calls this foreboding joy, that deep instinctive sense that when something good is happening, it's about to be taken away. This is why when your life is going well, you have that nagging feeling that everything is about to go to shit. This is why 3 good days in a row doesn't feel like progress. It feels like you're overdue for something bad. And sometimes we don't even wait for it. We sabotage the good thing ourselves just to get the drop over with, because at least then we're the ones in control of it. Number 2, certain emotions weren't allowed. Some of us were directly punished for feeling them. Others got the message indirectly through a look, a shift in the room, a parent who couldn't tolerate your happiness when they were miserable. That feeling happy when the people around us were suffering felt like betrayal, so we learned to dim ourselves to match the emotional temperature of the room. Either way, we learned that certain emotions were off the table completely, or that feeling them put us at risk. Number three, good emotions and survival mode can't coexist. A lot of good feelings require us to be in a regulated, grounded state. But during our childhoods, we were rarely there. We were either activated, hypervigilant, scanning, bracing, or we were shut down, checked out, numb, because it was too painful to stay present in our own bodies. There wasn't room for joy or excitement or peace. There wasn't room for joy or excitement or peace when your nervous system was busy keeping you alive. That means feeling good isn't just emotionally unfamiliar, it's physically unfamiliar. Many of us are still living in survival states well into adulthood, which means the muscle for holding good emotions is one we never got to develop. And when we do come out of those states, good emotions can actually feel overwhelming or disorienting. Not because something is wrong, but because your body genuinely doesn't recognize the sensation. Some people describe finally feeling relaxed or happy, and it almost feels like panic, because their body has no reference point for it. So some questions for y'all. Which of these hits closest to home for you, and can you see how it's showing up in your life right now? When was the last time you felt something genuinely good and your first instinct was to brace, suppress it, or talk yourself out of it? Is there an emotion on that list that you still don't feel safe feeling? What do you think would happen if you let yourself fully feel it? And what has helped you, or what do you think would help you learn how to actually let yourself feel good without fighting it?
Man, when I was putting this together, I was having some flashes to a lot of things as a kid. You know, I've often shared about how, like, there was a part of me that would get an adrenaline rush from the fighting in my home. But I was just thinking about how many times, you know, my mom promised me that she wasn't going to drink anymore. And just like how, oh, it would only take like those few seconds of hearing it in her voice, or just like seeing the look on her face, and just like that sinking feeling in my stomach, and just being so, like, so let down over and over and over again. And I remember this one time we were going to Disney World, and my dad was already down in Orlando, and my mom was supposed to pick me up in the middle of the day from school to go to the airport. And you know, that sixth sense that we have, she was picking me up at noon, but I just had this feeling that she was going to get drunk. And it was like 15 minutes after she was supposed to pick me up. And I remember calling from a payphone, and she was drunk, and she told me that she would be right there. And that was actually the very first time that I ever called somebody and told somebody else that my mom was an alcoholic. I remember I knew my friend's phone number by heart, and I just called up my friend's dad, and I remember saying to him, like, my mom's an alcoholic and she's on her way here driving drunk, and she's supposed to drive us to the airport. And so he came and met us at the school, and he took us to the airport. And at that point, like, I was angry, and I remember just kind of yelling at her in the airport, and I remember her being so fucking embarrassing on the plane. And then she, like, I just remember she'd, like, forgotten to pack, like, so much of my stuff. And I was obsessed with my hair. I think I was in the sixth grade. I was obsessed with my hair straightener at the time. And I remember being in the hotel and trying to take the actual, like, physical iron to, like, straighten my hair. And then just thinking about all these vacations that we would go on as a family, and, you know, it would either be my mom would get drunk or my dad would have some sort of meltdown over, like, a really minuscule amount of money. And then thinking about all of the trips that I took with my mom since I've been on this healing journey, I'm thinking about those trips I took with my mom to go to the US Open, and just like not being able to enjoy the moment because she's going to the bathroom and I'm just afraid she's never going to come back, you know. Or the time that, there was a time when she was supposed to come and visit me in San Francisco, and she had tickets for us for Hamilton, and we had all these fun things planned. And at this point, I just knew that, like, anything goes. but I got a phone call as soon as she landed in San Francisco. It was from the Delta flight attendant, and he was like, "Your mom's drunk. She can't walk. Like, what do you want me to do with her?" And I ended up getting her a hotel. You know, I told her that she couldn't stay with me. And I said, you know, we can still have a nice weekend together, but I'm not going to spend any time with you if you've been drinking. And I spent 1 hour with her, like, over the course of the next 3 days. And then that's actually what led, like, it was like a whole, I won't go into the whole story, but then it was like from that experience and like talking to my dad. And then from that experience, like several days later is like when I got a text message from my parents that said, "We've changed all the locks on the doors in Tahoe. Like, you're no longer welcome there anymore." And I think about this good thing doesn't last. You know, for me, it's really about abandonment. Just like constantly bracing for abandonment, just waiting, like, out of nowhere, you know, you're going to decide you don't like me, or you're going to disappear, or whatever it is. And I've made like really great progress there, but it's been so painful. You know, it's been like such a painful experience. But I don't experience that now. Like, I haven't experienced that with my parents for like several years. I feel like I got to a place where I kind of got numb to it, you know, in a way. And obviously I've healed a lot too, but my expectations are just so low. But there was a little girl who was hoping for, you know, like a really long time, you know? And so there's been a lot of grieving there. So that's really what this reading brought up for me. Go ahead, Nate.
So this is a great reading, Andrea, and thanks for sharing it with us. I think for me, if I look at this, all of them sort of hit home in some ways, but I think probably the biggest one is the sort of loneliness that comes along with no one in your family celebrating anything that ever accomplished or that you ever accomplished. And the someone else is always in crisis. And if I look back at, you know, the times where there's, you know, some sort of serious crisis. I've shared my mother's not very well mentally, and it seems like every time someone has had a big win in their life, she has made an attempt on her life. And it sort of seems like, you know, I remember, you know, having to go 12 hours from where I live to help my siblings collect her from the 72-hour hold that she's on. And it's sort of like, what am I going to do picking someone up at 8 at night, and I have to be 12 hours away? And it just sort of seems like, you know, at every turn, the sort of burdening of being highly parentified as a youngster comes sort of rushing back at other times. And it just reinforces the conversation around this deeply ingrained idea, you know, around what right do you have to be happy when someone else is miserable? And it just sort of seems like creating boundaries, setting distance, and sort of trying to live life a whole lot more intentionally to sort of abide by this mantra of live life, don't go back. And that going back means not only trying to stay away from the physical entwinement or enmeshment that can happen, but sort of creating that mental space to sort of keep those things going. And, you know, the sort of abuse that comes along with being reminded of everything that, you know, your parent had done for you, and you trying to do something on your own or trying to find your own path out, and having that thrown back at you. It's sort of like, well, of course, when you say something like, "After all I do for you, this is the thanks I get," when someone else is trying to celebrate something, you sort of reap what you sow in some ways. And to sort of get this message very early that I'm not wanted, it's sort of like, fine, if I'm not wanted, I'm going to go on and live my own life the way that I want to. And it's clear that my presence and my value as someone in this family is not what you think it is, and not anything that's really meaningful to anyone else. But anyway, I will pass, but great topic tonight, Andrea, and thanks for bringing it to us.
So it's just crazy, like maybe fate, that I really think that this topic is what brought me to this group, this to the shit show, because I grew up definitely in a house where like I wasn't allowed to have happy friendships or relationships outside of my relationships with my parents and my immediate family. I was punished for that. Like, you know, if my mom just couldn't tolerate the idea of somebody else being important in my life. And so I would be criticized for having friends. Like they would just pick people apart. And then like, as I got older, I started to realize what they were not telling me, that Laura, these people are not good people for you. You deserve better. They were telling me those are trash people. And you are also trash for wanting to have relationships with them. So never learned boundaries, never learned how to like seek emotionally healthy people. And so like, surprise, surprise, I wound up in a horrible marriage that I stayed in longer than I should have, as we do. And the, you know, I did finally start healing, and I started to really develop a relationship with myself and love myself enough to get myself out of that relationship and to start healing and learn what I wanted, and was able to find an amazing man that I'm married to, and we have this incredible healthy relationship. But I have, you know, recently that abandonment wound was triggered again. And I think it was because of this feeling of like something bad is going to happen. Like I am not, you know, I have this, just this deep sense of unworthiness, this deep sense of like, I'm incapable of making healthy choices for myself. And so I am going to fuck this up somehow. And so I, you know, I think I started to sabotage that relationship and that marriage. But like, I'm grateful at least that I had the awareness, and I'm grateful for this group and this topic and the last podcast episode, because it was just like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what has been happening for me right now. I have been waiting for the shoe to drop. So now it's so clearly, I know like what that work is that I want to do. So I will pass from here. Thank you.
Hello, I'm very grateful. I'm very happy to be here. I have been struggling, and I have been in a dangerous place for me. So I have been making a concerted effort not to go back to that place. And I am feeling better, and I'm holding steady. But it's the simplest things that bring me back, that ground me. I took a nice shower. I did my laundry. What I really want to share is this confusion and pain that I feel over what has happened with my daughter has just left me floundering. So what I've done is I've gone back to the sort of the central working guide as I'm trying to recover. And that is my belief that I am a spiritual being having a physical experience. And the challenges I face are helping me to stay connected with the spiritual, to see myself as valuable, and that all things work toward good. When I thought of that, all things work toward good, I thought of the five generations of women that include me and my daughter and my mother, who've experienced the same trauma as ACAs. I did the same thing my mother did. My mother did the same thing her grandmother did, her mother did. So how is there a movement toward good? I mean, really. So I went back to something I learned in the very beginning of this the treatment for alcoholism, the radical acceptance. I've decided I'm going to try staying in my lane, as I do think things work together for good with God and the universe. I do believe that, but it's not in my perception of time. So that I've come to know that it's not in my perception of time. So this is where I'm working right now. And I have decided that my daughter's rejection of me as a parent and my realization that throughout her childhood, she was suffering. And I just didn't recognize it because I was fixated on she's going to get an education because it was illegal when I started school. She's going to have what she needs, etc. And then here I am, no contact. So this is what I am, and I'm just letting you all know, this is what I'm doing now to stay with the belief that I say I have. I've decided that her going no contact with me after my inability to give up, I'm deciding for me it's a God shot because it's getting me to stop this obsession that I have to fix everything. I have to fix everything. And some things I have no control over. I was born into a world of patriarchy, rapacious capitalism and consumerism. Of I came into the world that way to a 14-year-old mother. So I spent my life trying to fix those things. I had no power to do that. So what I'm doing now is my daughter in the universe. This is an act, this is a God shot to get me to look at myself finally, because I never looked at myself. Always. I mean, when I was a little kid, the big thing was kids had toy boxes. I didn't have one, but I would go to play with kids who had them. I would get in their toy box and sort it out and organize it. And by the time I did that, I would look up. And my friend was gone. I mean, it's like, ugh. So this is getting me to stop and look at myself because right now I have nothing that impedes me taking care of myself and putting myself first and dealing with these traumas that brought me strength. But because of my perception, I thought I was cursed. So this is where I stand right now. I am fulfilling what's in front of me. I'm continuing to do the work because I can't go back. And my therapist, who does not comment on what I say, she just said to me, Sandra, there's nothing for you there. So I am so grateful for this space. Thank you for letting me talk. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for my life.
Well, first I'd like to say if I knew how to feel joy, I would feel it right now because this fucking group is amazing. I actually might be feeling a little bit of it.
Tell it, baby.
I tell you, it's fucking wild. Couple things are like coming together right now. I was listening to Surviving to Thriving as I was falling asleep last night because I never really read the book. I've just fallen asleep 500 times trying to listen to it. And I heard something that like my mind remembers as talking about how like you need to start by feeling the grief from the life that you lost from the stuff that you didn't receive or that happened to you in your childhood. And then from there, once you're able to feel the grief, you're able to start releasing the shame that was attached to that. And then once you get through the shame, you can start working through the depression and the sadness and thinking about that and this topic of like not being able to feel the good feelings. I feel like when I heard that last night, I realized that I've just spent like the past month and a half going through that exact cycle. This breakup that I just went through is probably going to be one of the greatest things that ever happened to me, because I'm realizing that it's made me feel all the same pains that I w started to feel as a young child, that I stopped feeling because it was too much. I used to have a picture of my inner child on my bathroom mirror, and I was trying to connect to my inner child. But about a month and a half ago, I started looking at pictures of my old middle school yearbook, and I saw like this, I mean, this kid that was completely just gone, no smile. And that made me think about remembering that at some point I held back the smile because I thought that's what I was supposed to do. Like, don't smile for your picture. And think I've talked about this stuff before, but I was angry back then with thinking about memories from like a Christmas coming home, one of the happiest days of a child's life, and six people stuffed in a little Buick Century. I'm in the middle seat between mom and dad, and we start coming to a red light, and out of nowhere, my dad just starts losing it, screaming, whatever the hell he was, F-bombs. A car had simply just tried to beat him to the far left turn lane, and it turned into him taking off his seatbelt, getting out of the car, screaming at these guys that got so scared that they drove through the red light to get the hell out of there. A couple years later, same exact fucking thing happened on the way to go play golf, which was like the most exciting day of the week for me. Except this time a guy flashes a gun and my dad starts just screaming louder. And I mean, the last thing that comes up is just that all of the times where I got the talk, I got the look, the disgust. I mean, I can still feel the pain from that look that man would give me. And it made me realize that that's the same feeling I get in every close relationship, that I sense anybody may have some sort of conflict with me. And all of those fucking feelings that I've been feeling lately, just like from that book, I'm finally feeling the shit from the stuff that I didn't receive. I didn't receive the love. It's pretty fucking sad. And I don't know, I'm just grateful that there is another side to all this pain. I'm not fighting it anymore. And I haven't gone further into the book yet, but I'm pretty sure on the other side of this fucking pain, sadness, and depression should probably be joy and happiness. So I'm going to keep going that direction. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks everyone for the great shares and the great reading. It's all very relatable. One thing that really stuck with me is it's partly from the podcast this week as well, but talking about the I'm gonna forget the Brené Brown term, but the thing about joy, that joy doesn't have, like, sometimes if people's nervous systems are in, I guess, the dorsolateral state, joy doesn't have a place to land, and the people, like, there's just not the capacity to feel it. And that one really stuck with me, because I can remember being, a teenager when things were really, really weird, and there I remember feeling so frustrated sometimes because it was, there seemed to be a lack of ability, like, beyond the kind of nights when there was sort of explosions of emotion and kind of rage and stuff. In any, like, instance or opportunity to have fun or feel joy or do something was just, it didn't seem that my parents had the capacity for that. Like even watching a movie, we couldn't, I wouldn't have a boyfriend over or something and we'd, the four of us were going to watch a movie, but I don't know if it was like decision about what it was or like the time that they would take. They're just, it was kind of like anything positive. It just couldn't find a place to land. And it just, it felt so punishing. just felt like joy, just any kind of like normalcy just wasn't allowed. It just, there's nowhere to, for it to be. And I've been thinking lately about sort of, I feel like the trauma from my childhood, then when I had kids, it was sort of that the abandonment stuff, it was sort of replayed. And it's almost like there was, it was like a second lifetime period of the same kind of trauma. And it was parents just not being capable of being present, both physically and mentally, but also like in times when, you know, where there's opportunity to enjoy the kids. Or my mom one time said, like, you can't, like, it's something like my daughter like wiggled her way into your heart, whether you want it or not, or something. Like it was like they were trying to protect themselves from feeling the joy and the love. And they like they've had to keep themselves small, which they've done in order to survive. And really, it is, you know, it's all unhealed trauma and on their generational stuff on their side, stuff they just didn't address. So they never, it just seems tragic and really painful and just unfortunate, unnecessary, just all of it. And I really, I've just been coming to terms with that kind of fact in the past little while and how much it hurt when there would be like an opportunity to connect or feel the love and connection. It, yeah, it would be there and it would, then it would get shut off. And so like that, it was, it's real, you know, it's not just a fear of the love and the stuff being shut off. It's fucking real. And it's a shame. And I so clearly saw that dynamic. So I appreciated the perspective that this, the conversation and the podcast gave. So thanks very much.
Yeah, this is a really good topic and really good shares too. My parents, they would fight and then my mom would run off and it depended on how long she would be gone. And sometimes she would take us. But there would be like stretches of time where it was like, it was okay. You know, they were together. Maybe they would like argue and stuff, but you know, we were all still in the same house. And it just kind of kept going like all the way into my adulthood. One memory that came up was, I remember, I think I was probably 23 at the time. I had just gotten married that year. And my husband and I and our daughter, we were going to be doing Christmas at our house. Just with my parents and my brothers. Yeah, they were going to do Christmas and also New Year. And, you know, I was looking forward to it. We were all pretty excited. You know, I made food and stuff and it was really good. And, but then my parents were like kind of sniping at each other like the whole time. And I think that was also the time where I told them, like, you guys can't take, you know, Jubilee with you if you're going to be arguing like this, if you're going to be like getting so angry with each other. You can't like do that in front of her. I don't know exactly what set it off. Like it could have been something really stupid, probably. But my mom was like, you know what? I've had it. I can't do this. Your dad's driving me nuts. I'm leaving. I'm going home. But don't tell him. Like, you know, don't tell him that when I leave, like I'm going to be packing up and I'm going to move into, I think she moved into a different room or something. I can't remember. I might even be mixing it up with a different instance. But she left, like, you know, we had Christmas and it was fine. And then between Christmas and New Year, she just took off. But we still kind of kept going. She had told my brothers and I about her plan to like pack up and everything. And wanted us to like just swear ourselves to secrecy. And I was 23, but I still did it because I still, I guess, felt like a loyalty towards my mom, even though like I didn't want to upset my dad either. And when he got home, he ended up calling me and he was like, "Why didn't you tell me anything? Like, did you know? Why didn't you tell me?" And I just broke down crying because I felt so guilty. I'm like, I can't believe I'm like such a piece of shit. And my husband was just like, like it's gonna be fine and whatever. Like, you were just doing the best that you could. But I don't know. It was like, it just really sucks because we were so excited to do this first Christmas, like, hosting as a family. And it was going well. And then my mom decided, like, oh, things haven't been going well with your dad, and I can't wait until we get back home to deal with this. I'm gonna do it now, and I'm gonna drag my children into it again. And yeah, it just really sucked. And I can still like hear him like calling me and asking, like, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you let me know? Give me a heads up, anything, so I'm not just caught off guard. And yeah, I don't know. It's like you can never just have a good moment. Something has to happen. Like, you can have a good moment, but it's not even gonna matter because something shitty is gonna happen afterwards. And like, they're still together too, so of course. But yeah, I don't know. Anyways, thank you.